Dham is covered for materialistic people because no one can enter the Dham until they're completely spiritual. There's nothing material within the Dham. So there has to be a place for people to come who may want to come to the Dham for a materialistic reason. Just like if you have a house and you have, say, you have an inner sanctum, say for the king, he has his own private quarters, but not anyone is allowed to go there. So there are outer rooms, and they can come there. And if he chooses, he can go and meet them there. Or if he invites them, they can come in. But they can't just walk in straight into his private quarters. So that's a mundane example, so it has some differences from the Dham. But we should understand that nothing can be there, nothing is there that's not totally spiritual. Everything there, everything is for Krishna's pleasure. There's nothing that's not. And here, when we come to this phenomenal world, we see some things are for Krishna's pleasure and there's a lot of other things going on as well. So there has to be a place for that. Otherwise there's no step between the conditioned souls who are lost in this illusion that I'm God and I'm independent and all these energies of God should serve me so I can be independent. He's thinking like that. Then how is he going to make that transition? So therefore the Dham is there. Krishna descends and he brings the Dham in this way. That nitya, it continues and continues to remain within the material world. As long as the material world is manifest, the transcendental Dham is here for the benefit of the conditioned soul so they can uplift. So then they can go in underneath that covering when they're free and they're ready to. Yes. The Dham is the place. We'll hear again later about the connection between the Dham, Nam, and Kam, and the importance of the Dham, so that we can understand why it is like this. Because it is. It's essential. It's not like some people say, "I like to go to Vrindavan," other people say, "Oh, I like staying where I am." But no, the Dham is essential as part of the spiritual process, and there are so many beacons. Yes. If you have a big hill, right, and you put a piece of plastic over it, the plastic is going to be shaped just like the big hill. So, but that thin covering of Maya is not like a piece of plastic that you can touch and poke and feel. It's subtle. It's a state of consciousness. And in a sense, although this is also seems contradictory, but it's not, the covering is on our eyes rather than on the Dham. We see it, that the covering is on the Dham. But when Prabhupada was asked, you know, why are there so many things here, like impure things, and he said, it's your senses that are impure. If your senses were not impure, you could see the Dham as it actually is. So this is this mysterious aspect, transcendental nature of the Dham. I'd like to go on to this again to share with you some reflections on the... Yes, sorry. Prabhupada said... Vishayacharya kabe sudha habe man kabe hama hirvo Sri Vrindavan. That the thing that has to be given up is the desire for material enjoyment within the Dham. So one can say that one person's desire for material, and one person may appear to be having a desire for material enjoyment, but they may require certain facilities, just as Srila Prabhupada built the buildings in Mayapur Dham, because he understood that the Westerners required some facility because they were used to a different standard of living. But as an individual, and sometimes we can tell by looking at others without meaning to be critical, just by their very demeanor, that they may very well be engaging in vishaya or enjoyment, material enjoyment within the Dham, then whilst one is engaging in that way, you can't see the Dham. You're not even in the Dham. You may think that you're in the Dham, but you're not in the Dham. So when there's too much of that amongst the devotees or amongst the local people, both, the Dham becomes very congested. And you see that you come and you don't feel quite peaceful. Even though you're in Vrindavan, you can feel the oppressiveness because there's too much of that going on. So we can't ourselves change or arrange everything for everyone, because we don't have that kind of power. Plus, in Kali Yuga, the Sri Vrindavan Dham slowly becomes completely unmanifest. So we can't stop that. We can't say, no, I want it to go the other way, because this is all under higher arrangement. But we can and we should be awfully careful ourselves to make sure that we take what we need to make us so that our mind is peaceful, so we can be in the Dham and use our time whilst we're here as carefully as possible. And this is, I remember living here for so many years, it's an even heavier responsibility when you live here, because, you know, the mind wanders, and if you're here for, say, 2 weeks or 3 weeks, you can be on your best behavior, and then you go home. But those who are living here, they're always here. So therefore they have this, it's a very stringent responsibility to stay in the Dham, to keep always adjusting oneself. But it doesn't necessarily mean that you have to live extremely frugally, but you have to fill your time with appropriate devotional activities that will be pleasing to Krishna, pleasing to Srila Prabhupada, if you want to stay here and grow and blossom in the transcendental atmosphere of the Dham.
Would you say that, is there a recommendation that
we can't adopt the lifestyle of the residents up here? It's impossible to adopt that lifestyle. So when we come here, we don't come here to merge into the Mayak Vrindavan. We come here to utilize, under the guidance of the liberated soul to who has brought us here, we come here to utilize the facilities that he's provided for us so that we can purify our heart and consciousness free of that desire to be the enjoyer and the master, so that then we can become qualified to enter into the pastimes as Krishna goes from place to place in the Bhauma Vrindavan. But that is such a high qualification. So we have a long way to go and a lot of work to do. So I don't think that you can jump and say, I'm going to live like this or I'm going to live like that, and automatically that will be my problem solved. The inherent quality, just as my husband so often mentions, the inherent quality, and Maharaj also, of the residents of Vrindavan, is that they're completely 100% servant. So we must get that. If we don't get that point, then we'll take our birth in the Mayak Vrindavan. And you can say, oh, that's very nice. But it's not compared to, because there's so many people, I've met people even so far afield as in the West who've been born in Vrindavan. So many people in Bombay were born in Vrindavan. There's so many pigs born in Vrindavan, and they put them and they take them out and they take them to Calcutta and they slaughter them. They're born in Vrindavan, but Krishna's not a fool. You can't cheat the system. You can't make some kind of a shortcut to get somewhere. You have to wholeheartedly have become surrendered. Do you understand? So you can adjust this and that there, but if you don't get we heard about the flute, what it took for the flute to become Krishna's flute. It had to go through so many very painful stages. It had to stand on one leg in the water. Then it had to be chopped down. Then it had to be placed in the scorching sun and dried until it became so dry. And then it had to be drilled. Do we want to be drilled? Do we want to be dried? Do we want to be chopped down? Do we want to stand on one leg? No, we just like to have a nice time in Vrindavan. So how can we be in Vrindavan like that? There, for people like that, this covering must be there so that they can entertain themselves with the idea that now I am a Brajavasi, Dhamvasi, I'm in Vrindavan. Do you see? But that's not the goal that Srila Prabhupada was recommending. He was recommending us to go to this Krishna's real pastime place and serve Krishna and enter fully into the nature, the realm of Vrindavan Dham. There's a vast difference between the two. Yes.
Although there is a difference, we
have at the end. Thank you. Yes. Any other Yes. Time I remember my husband and I were walking around Govardhan, and it was just after the rainy season had started. And we came to the, just past Punchari, where it's very flat. And there are a lot of old, old kadamba trees. And there was grass there, and there's always just sand there. It's a large expanse of sand. We'll go there actually tomorrow. So it was just grass and grass and grass. And usually it was sand and sand and sand. And it looked so picturesque. And I remember thinking in my mind, oh, it would be so much nicer, you know, if it was all grassy here all the time. Because it would look so beautiful, you'd be able to understand, oh yes, this is Govardhan Hill, this is that. It would be natural. And then it just occurred to me, what would happen if there was grass there? All the people from Delhi would come for picnics, right? And they'd have to put a swing and slide there, you know, so that people could, because immediately that enjoying spirit, we come to Vrindavan, it looks very nice. Well, it looks very nice to our eyes. We like it.
That's what happens in Mayapur, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah,
but Mayapur has a special facility that it gives blessings no matter what. But Vrindavan is a little more stringent.
But they come and eat meat and things like that.
Yeah.
And
yeah. They have to, yes. So it's not that we're saying that everything dirty, it's good, it's nice, it's dirty, we shouldn't worry about it. But you try and clean it up and you'll see that the next day again it looks the same. And so that is not like the dirtiness that you see in another place, because it's the covering of the Dham. So you begin to learn when you live here that you simultaneously try to be as responsible as you can to make everything as nice for Krishna's pleasure, but not for your pleasure. And when it doesn't go your way, how you think it should be for Krishna's pleasure, you have to say, well, I'm clearly not in control here. There's a higher principle at work when it comes to the transcendental Dham. So yes, it would be nice if everything looked just as we would imagine it should look from the pastimes that we read, but in Kali Yuga you can imagine how people are taking advantage. Now they want to put a highway through Vrindavan, and then it will become, and all the shopkeepers will prosper, and then they will try to make arrangements for their own improvement of their economic condition. But who's thinking of the pleasure of Krishna in this particular situation? So Vrindavan becomes covered by a type of materialism, whether it's an ugly materialism or a pleasant materialism, it becomes covered. The sense of Krishna's pleasure becomes covered. It becomes smeared with everybody else's personal sense enjoyment. That's the covering of the modes of nature that is just thinly over the top of the transcendental Dham. Would like to talk again about this Nam, Dham and Kam, because we've had an opportunity to hear a lot about the holy name. And we've also heard some about the Dham. So if we read again the connection between these three, as is given by Śrīla Bhaktisiddhānta, I think we'll have some deeper realization from it than we did when we first arrived here. So first of all, he says that the holy name will not manifest without the service to the Dham. So what does this mean? Does this mean that there's no such thing as the holy name? You can't chant Hare Krishna unless you live in Vrindavan? No, but we've been discovering, listening to Sachinandan Swami, what the holy name really is. The holy name is Krishna. The holy name is not just some a word. And that's it. You chant, we say this word, and that's the essence of the name. The essence of the name is that it's actually Krishna himself. So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur tells us that there's no other means of escape from the clutches of worldly inclinations for anyone except to serve the name. This is how one can become free of worldliness. And this is also how one can become free of wrong ideas and superstitions. So does anyone have another word that superstitions could be changed to, so you can get an idea of what we mean by superstitious? How are we superstitious, and the holy name can clean us of superstitions? prejudices is a good word. Yes, I think he actually uses that word as well. And then if we chant the holy name properly, we can become rooted in the service of the desire of Krishna. So now we have heard that Krishna is the enjoyer, and we're bewildered into thinking that we ourselves are the master and enjoyer, and that the only way that we can convert our dilemma is to actually chant Krishna's name. And the only way we can chant Krishna's name with great power and enthusiasm is by actually coming to and taking advantage of the holy Dhamma. So he says that the service of the holy Dhamma, what does that do? And what is the service to the holy Dhamma? One of the services certainly is to go from place to place and to hear and to chant Krishna's name whilst we're staying here. He says the service to the Dhamma frees one from the jaws of illusion. And what is the illusion that it frees one from? The illusion is the wrong theory that the jiva is God or master. So is not that what we just heard was the dilemma or the difficulty of the jiva, that he's thinking, mistaking, I am this mind and body and I can be independently God or master? So then in that conditioned state, he thinks that there's no existence except within the mind, except within my imagination. If I believe it or not, if I believe it, then the Dhamma, Krishna and all his pastimes exist. If I don't believe it, they don't exist. So if you think for a moment, we all have this tendency. If I don't believe that, I notice sometimes when we were hearing different things and my mind was wandering and I became tired, I just suddenly picked up that my mind was saying, I actually don't believe this. Like as if that was enough, you know. I'm bored. I'm tired. I want to go take. I don't believe this. And then I suddenly checked myself and said, what do you mean you don't believe it? Do you think that makes any sense? And in the Chaitanya Bhagavad we were hearing that one can enter into the pastimes of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu according to the depth of one's own spiritual advancement. So we hear this statement and then the mind says, I'm bored, I don't believe this. And then you've got to say, it means you're not very spiritually advanced, maybe. And then we have to accept that definition, yes. So then I have to become more spiritually advanced. So the Dhamma, service to the Dhamma leads to the service to Krishna's name and service to the desire of Krishna. And the relationship with the Dhamma is established by chanting. Chanting brings the goal. And the goal is to serve Krishna's desire. And service of Krishna's desire, rather than our own desire, saves us from the hands of the foe of hankering for one's own gratification, and frees us also from serving our own earthly passions, and installs us in the service of Krishna himself. So this is what we have to try to understand, what we have to try little by little, or quickly, slowly, according to our aptitude or according to our ability, to understand that the name is the essence of all transcendental learning, and only pure souls chant the pure holy name. And that we cannot serve Krishna without serving the name. And that we cannot become free of worldly inclinations and wrong ideas without understanding the nature of the Dhamma. So the holy name comes here to this world, to this material atmosphere. And the activities of the name are what are displayed within the Dhamma. And the Dhamma and the name together will bring us the goal. So does anyone have any points they want to mention on this?
Could you explain the next to last sentence?
The activities of the name are displayed within the Dhamma.
Oh, the name meaning Krishna.
Krishna, meaning Krishna. So we say the name and our mind goes name. We say Krishna, our mind says Krishna. We don't put these two together as one. When we say name, we don't think Krishna. We think these two are separate, but they're actually non-different than each other. Does anyone have any points or questions? Yes. Local people.
Local people. Yeah.
Yes.
Because I think
yes.
And then, because they are raga.
Yes.
And then, so does it mean that all these people here who are born in Kali, you know, the bus is not this in the city, but
yes.
Landscape, there are actually raga devotees there actually.
There are, but they're not all. They don't have to be rugged devotees to live in Vrindavan, but they are. They're natural. There's a nature to the living here where they have... He explained that they have a different mood, that they serve Krishna spontaneously. And he explained to Jagannanda that you're on a different platform. So don't mix... You will become confused if you mix the two. So this means that Jagannanda, in that giving instruction to us, if he was to follow Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he would come also to the spontaneous platform. But if he were to try to do that by mixing the two processes, then that was not according to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's desire. Any other question? There was another question. Yes.
So you speak every time from Vrindavan Dham. I come from German and I live in Goloka Dham.
Oh, congratulations. That's coming. We're coming to that. That's next. Yes, we're speaking now from the location of Vrindavan Dham because we're all here. And if we didn't start here, then and if we don't get everything clear what is here, then how will we know what Goloka Dham should be like? And how would we know what Gopinath Dham should be like? Because we also live in a Dham. And anyone who is living in a transcendental place, a place where the atmosphere is dedicated to a particular saint or a particular deity, it can become like Vrindavan. But that depends on, first of all, understanding what Vrindavan is like. So we come to the Dham and we get the proper understanding here, then we can take that with us to Goloka Dham, and we must do that. Yes. Anything else? Yes.
I'm sorry, where is it described about Nam, Ham, and Kam?
Oh, I'll show it to you later. It's in one book of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's, but unfortunately the English is not first class. So I'll show you the reference.
What's the title of the book?
Sri Chaitanya's Teachings.
Oh.
Yeah. But it's poorly translated, so we have to sort of make the best we can from it. Now the third section, or the last section of what I would like to talk to you about today, is in regards to something I also mentioned that I wanted to speak about in our introduction, and that is I would like to use the example of one very exalted personality and share with you his life, some of his life, part of his life, and also this concept that we were talking about, that if we're not living in Vrindavan, what is it like to live in a Dham? I live in Goloka Vrindavan, Goloka Dham, Gopinath Dham, this Dham, so many Dhams are there. So I would like to speak about Rasikanand. Unfortunately, we haven't got the light right now, but in the front, on the right-hand side? Is that the right-hand side? Left-hand side? On the right-hand side? On the left.
On the left of the right.
On the left of the right-hand side.
You've left me That's all right.
I have a problem with left and right.
Let's point with side.
On that side, on this side. On the front, on the right-hand side, on the left-hand side of the five seated personalities is Rasikanand, his bluish color. So you won't miss him because he's bluish. So Rasikanand appeared actually in Bengal, but it was just on the border of Utkal. So he's considered to be a devotee from Utkal or Orissa. He appeared in 1590. And he became a very powerful acharya and preacher of the teachings of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. His spiritual master, who's on the right-hand side of the right, is Shyamananda Goswami, Shyamananda Pandit. And perhaps some of you have heard there's a book called Bhakti Ratnakar, and it describes in there how after Chaitanya Mahaprabhu disappeared from this world, he finished his prakat lila, his manifest lila, and he went into the aprakat stage. Then at that particular time, the next predecessor acharyas after he were the six Goswamis of Vrindavan. So Sri Rupa Goswami and Sanatan Goswami, soon after that, they also left. And then the possessor of the chair, you could say, or the leader of the Gaudiya Vaishnava community, became Srila Jiva Goswami. He was the nephew of Rupa and Sanatan. So Srila Jiva Goswami was an extraordinarily renowned scholar, a Vaishnava scholar. And Srila Prabhupada even went so far as to say, yeah, and some people even say that all the Gaudiya Sampradayas, they got their philosophical treatise or their explanation for everything from Srila Jiva Goswami's writings. And the Satsandarbha is particularly very famous. So at that time, from Bengal, two young exalted personalities came to Vrindavan. One of them was Srinivasacharya. And Srinivasacharya, he was the first one. His father had been present when Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had his head shaved and took sannyas. And his father came from a small village in Bengal. And it's actually, when you read the story, it's sort of so striking that his father was, you could say, perhaps the same age as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He was studying in his small village, just not very far away from Navadvip. And he had kept thinking, I have to go and see this Nimai Pandit. I have to go and see him. But he kept putting it off. So one day he decided, no, I'm going to go and see him. So he left his village. And on the way he went to Katwa, which is the place where he knew one sannyasi called Bharati Maharaj. So he went to stay with him on his way to Navadvip to see this Nimai Pandit. But when he got to the home of Bharati Maharaj, he found that the courtyard was full of crying people. And he didn't know what was going on. And he was looking here and there to see what were they all looking at. Why were they so intensely emotional and so disturbed? And he saw, right in the center of this crowd, was this Nimai Pandit who he was coming to see and to participate in his pastime. And he saw that he was sitting there and there was a barber. And he was asking him to shave his head because he was to take sannyas. And he was to leave Navadvip forever and ever. And everybody was in tears. So when he saw this, he was watching this scene. And he heard Keshav Bharati told him afterwards, he gave him his sannyas name and he said, your name is Sri Krishna Chaitanya. And this Gangadas was his name, this Brahmin. He heard this name and he became so mesmerized and sort of mad from this scene that he went back to his village and he couldn't even speak. All he could do was say, keep repeating, Sri Krishna Chaitanya, Sri Krishna Chaitanya, Sri Krishna. He couldn't even tell anyone what he'd seen. And everybody became so worried. He came home mad. And then they found that if they would say also Sri Krishna Chaitanya, Sri Krishna Chaitanya, he would calm some. So they changed his name to Chaitanya Das. And then in this way, slowly, slowly he became pacified. So after some time, having understood that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had gone to Puri, he decided to go there also with his wife. So he headed towards Jagannath Puri. And it describes in the Bhakti Ratnakar that on the way he began to reflect and he thought, I'm so fallen, I'm such a fallen person, I will never get to see him. It's so unlikely that he will welcome me or he'll remember me or I'll see him. And he became overwhelmed with lamentation about his own helpless, fallen state. And then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared to him in a dream that night and told him, come, come, come. So he proceeded on to Jagannath Puri. And when he got there, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was coming out of the Jagannath temple. And when he saw this humble brahmana with his wife, And generally speaking, ladies stayed at a great distance from Mahaprabhu. He was there with his wife standing outside the temple. He immediately embraced him and welcomed him to Jagannath Puri. And then he said to him, "You will get what you desire." Now, this was something. All of a sudden, just before going to Jagannath Puri, this Chaitanya Das, who had never, ever, ever wanted to have a family, he was always very simple, he suddenly conceived of the idea that he wanted to have a son. And this was in his mind when he went to Jagannath Puri. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave him this mystical blessing, "You will get what you desire." And the Vaishnavas thought, what does he want? What is this desire that he has? And Swarup Damodar said, "We'll find out later. The Lord will reveal this mystery." So Chaitanya Das, he stayed there some time and he had darshan of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But after a short time, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said to him, "Now you should go back to your village. And when you go back to your village, you should have a son. And your son will be so special. He will personify my prema bhakti. He will be so powerful personality. So you should leave immediately." So Chaitanya Das was so unhappy to leave. But he followed the Lord's order and he returned to his village. And after some time he gave birth to a son. And his son was Srinivasacharya. So Srinivas and likewise Narottam Das Thakur, who was appeared around about the same time in Kettari Dham, and Shyamananda, who appeared very close to the same time in Orissa, they were all exalted, liberated, transcendental personalities, eternal associates of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, whose leela it is to come just after Mahaprabhu has left. Can you imagine? Just after. And the whole world was inundated with lamentation. Mahaprabhu's close associates were leaving, one after another, and they enter into the scene. And all they want to do is see Mahaprabhu, but he's just gone, just missed him. And this is their pastime relationship with Mahaprabhu. So finally, Srinivasacharya and Narottam Das Thakur, they arrived in Vrindavan as a solace for the intense mood of separation that they felt in the absence of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. They found themselves given shelter and affection by Sri Jiva Goswami. And they lived at Radha Damodar. And eventually, Shyamananda also came. And the three of them studied under Sri Jiva Goswami for some time until he ordered the three of them to return to their native places, taking with them the books of the Goswami, the books that the Goswamis had written, so they could be disseminated throughout Bengal and Orissa. So they made their way back with different adventures on the way, Srinivas to Orissa, and the other two, Srinivas and Narottam to Bengal, and Shyamananda to Orissa. Meanwhile, Rasikanand was born. And when he was very young, he showed all kinds of extraordinary characteristics also that indicated that he was also an eternal associate of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So he was studying and chanting and respecting saintly people, playing the pastimes of Krishna all the time as a young boy. And he grew up in this way in a very rich family. His father was a king in that area. And when he became a certain age, I didn't describe how old, his father found a suitable bride for him. And her name was Icha Devi, also from a very well-to-do family. And the marriage took place. But at that time, Rasikanand, he was born and given the name of Rasik Murari. The astrologers gave him the name Sri Rasika, and his father said, "If you don't mind, I would like to call my son Murari." So he was called Rasik Murari. So Rasika, he was married. And after some time, he found himself apathetic towards married life and the different aspects of his social setting. And he wanted only to remember and think about Krishna. So he traveled some time with his father. And one time when he was in a very special place, he had a dream. And in that dream, Krishna came to him and told him that his guru would be Shyamananda, and that Shyamananda Prabhu would be coming very shortly and he would meet him. So soon after that, Shyamananda returned to Orissa and the two met and he accepted initiation. And his wife also, she became known as Shyamadasi. So then, Shyamananda gave an instruction to the wife of Rasikanand and he told her that she should serve Vaishnavas food and water and that by serving like this, she would gain all perfections. So soon after that, Rasikanand and Shyamananda decided to return to Braja for some time. And Shyamadasi also asked her husband whether she could come. But he requested her to stay where she was at that time in Orissa. And he told her that if she remained at home and she performed this service of serving Vaishnavas, it would give her the result of visiting millions and millions of tirthas. And that later on he would take her with him. So she stayed in Utkal and she stayed there and served for some time. Meanwhile, Rasikananda and Shyamananda Prabhus, they came to Vrindavan, they spent some time here, and then Rasikananda also had a dream in which when he was in a Govardhan actually, that the people in Utkal were waiting for him. They were missing him too much. And so therefore, he should return as soon as possible. So he returned, and he came back to Orissa. And then after that time, his father died. When his father died, the rest of his family became somewhat critical because he was so unworldly and he was so interested in giving away money and serving Vaishnavas and chanting all the time. So his brothers were not very satisfied with him. So he moved away from the family and he established himself in a very, very nice place on the bank of the Suvarnarekha River, which was a very special place where the Pandavas had stayed. And this place, it describes, became like a Gupta Vrindavan. So then he lived there at that place, and when Shyamananda came back, he asked Shyamananda if he would give a name to the family deity that he had recaptured. It had been in the hands of other people. So he went and took that deity and brought it to that place. And he asked Shyamananda to please name the deity. So Shyamananda Prabhu gave that deity the name Gopi Balava Roy. And he renamed the village. He said, this village should be named Gopi Balavpur. He said the specialty of this village will be that here Krishna and his devotees will be served very nicely. And this place will become famous like Vrindavan. And your wife will become the owner. And Govindaji, Sri Govinda, will appear in the way that I meditate upon him. He said, Rasika, he will travel and preach. And but you will dedicate the wife, she should dedicate herself to the deity. So then, Rasika and Shyamananda, they traveled here and there. And their traveling was tremendous. Wherever they went, they would hold these large festivals. And hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people would accept Vaishnavism as a result of their preaching. And the culture was so much intact at that time that both Shyamananda and his disciple Rasikananda and other of his disciples, they all initiated. So we can see we are not able to do that because some contempt may arise in the junior person in regards to the senior person, so some caution is applied. But the culture being as it was, it's very interesting to describe. It describes Rasikanand. When he would travel, he would act very authoritatively and he would preach. He was so learned in Shastra and he would have long kirtans, harinam and so forth. But when his guru came, he wouldn't answer any questions and he would keep his eyes always at his feet, carefully. He would do nothing when the guru was there. As soon as his guru left, then again he would speak very strongly and preach. And many times he would send disciples, you should take initiation from Shyamananda. Some people would go to Shyamananda, he'd say, you should take initiation from Rasikananda. And in this way, the Shyamanandi sect became very strong in Orissa. One time even, he went to one village and there was a Muslim king. And the Muslim was very atheistic. And he gave so many arguments why Rasikananda was not a proper person. And then this huge tumult occurred when a very wild elephant appeared in the village and started wrecking everything and pulling down houses and breaking trees and so on and so forth. And this Muslim was there, and Rasikanand himself, he went and approached the elephant and he preached to the elephant, and the elephant became tame, and he actually accepted the elephant as a disciple. And that elephant used to come when he would have festivals. The elephant would come and behave very politely. And one time he was somewhere, he had no food. And the elephant came and he saw that Rasikanand, he has nothing to eat. So he went away and he came back with his trunk with some offerings to give so that he would be provided for. So he was very extraordinary. And then what he began to do was establish festivals. And unfortunately, I have neither the time nor the facility to read you the description of the festivals, but they were so wonderful. Sometimes they would go on for as long as 12 days. When his Guru Maharaj left, he held a 12-day Mahotsav. And then the first day, he would welcome so many Vaishnavas. He would take a year to prepare for a festival, to collect all of the vegetables and the grains and all the facilities. And then he would build a huge pavilion with coloured cloth, and he would have 12 sets of deities, Radha Krishna deities, on all the various corners of the pavilion. And he trained the sons of his disciples to perform dramas and leelas expertly, so they would perform different pastimes of Krishna in Vrindavan. And in this way, he would bring so many people together with these wonderful festivals. And sometimes they would perform the festivals at Gopi Balavpur, and sometimes they would perform them here and there in Orissa. And towards the end of his traveling and preaching, he would go to Gopi Balavpur only for the purpose of having a festival. When the festival was complete, he would go again traveling, and from place to place to place, wherever he went. He initiated 30 festivals in a year that the Sampradaya is still meant to observe. And one of them was a 12-day festival, including Janmashtami, Radhashtami, and so on and so forth. What are you saying?
Oh, it's just the men talking.
Oh. So in this way, he made so many disciples, and finally, eventually, Shamananda Prabhu left. So when Shamananda Prabhu left this world, he gave the responsibility for this Gopi Balavpur in the hands of Rasikanand. And then the other Vaishnavas said, so who is going to take care of the worship of the deities here, because you're traveling all the time? So then he asked them, you decide. So they all discussed amongst themselves, and they chose one of his sons who was very qualified, and they said he should take up for his life the worship of this deity. So he took up the worship of the deity, and 400 years have passed since then. And although I have not had the good fortune as of yet to visit that particular place, still it is there, and the deities are there, and the family still takes responsibility for the worship. And still there are hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people who are followers in that particular line, the Shamananda line. So the reason that I wanted to talk about this was because I wanted to bring, from the point of Vrindavan Dham, to take the concept out of Vrindavan and consider what Srila Prabhupada wanted all over the world. In the West, in Germany, in England, in Australia, in the most unlikely places where the materialism is so thick. It's not just a thin covering. It's like icebergs, like mountains of Maya. But it seems to me that this is what Srila Prabhupada wanted. He wanted, along with temples and deities, he wanted to establish also places of pilgrimage or dhams. So a temple is a place of pilgrimage, it is a dham. A place of a saintly person is a dham. But a temple has only got the particular function of the worship and certain activities that a temple is responsible for. But a dham has more than that, because the places need to be revealed. that one can take pilgrimage there. One can sit beside Govardhan Hill, whether it be in Germany, whether it be here in Vrindavan, whether it be in Mayapur at the Chaitanya Mat, where Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur himself made a Radhakund, Shamakund, and Govardhan Hill, or whether it be in any country of the world. My understanding is that Srila Prabhupada wants us to establish these places in the different countries and to dedicate ourselves to trying to become purified and trying to understand this Dhamma Tattva as it actually is, and then to bring that quality of bhakti alive in the different places. Now, when I read The Pastimes of Rasikanand, which I've only given you a brief outline of, I become painfully aware that he was an exalted, liberated soul, and so he could do so many wonderful things. So he had this amazing potency. So what are we? I think, what can I do? What can we do? How can we do anything? We forget from moment to moment, we forget Krishna. So how can we have this effect? But my understanding is, from what Srila Prabhupada said, that as the Krishna consciousness movement continues, that exalted personalities will appear within our midst, and the strength and integrity of the Krishna consciousness spread, because it has to spread to every town, every village throughout the world, it will be given momentum. But in the meantime, before such an exalted personality is recognized by us, we have to make sure at least that we hold on to what we have been given by Srila Prabhupada, and at least we try to maintain that. And if we can do an awful lot more than that, it is greatly to our credit, and Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu will be very pleased with us. But if we can't, at least we must maintain what Srila Prabhupada himself worked so hard to establish throughout the world. But basically, this is just the beginning. If you turn on the hot water tap, what happens? What comes? Does hot water always come? What sometimes comes before the hot water? And then? And then, if you're lucky. So, likewise, when you turn on the hot water tap, first it's cold, then it's warm, and then it's hot, ideally. So we can see the same phenomena will be there perhaps in the Krishna conscious spread, because certainly Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has predicted that this Krishna consciousness movement will go everywhere. So, I would like to encourage anyone who is trying to make a Dharm-like atmosphere either in their own home or within their temple community or within a larger setting like a Goloka Dham, a place that is meant to have so many features of a Dham, that they should continue to do this and they should come to Sri Vrindavan Dham in the right way, for the right reason, to cure this almost impossible to cure disease that we heard Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur speaking of, which as Srila Prabhupada described is our hatred of Krishna. We should come here, hear Krishna's pastimes, pray to the Dhamma, pray to the people here that somehow or other I'm desperately in need of help. Others may be better off than me, but I'm in such a great need of help. So please help me, because I've come here and I want to actually become a serious, committed devotee of Radha and Krishna, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Srila Prabhupada. So I'd like to again ask if anyone would like to make any extra points. Yes? Important. Because this Gopi Balavpur, named after the deity is the center. So similarly, if we can also make the deity the center.
Who is the center of Gopinath
Dham? It's hard to tell, isn't it? Someone very small.
And who is the center of Gopinath?
Everyone becomes much happier. Because this is our dilemma. We have a center as ourselves and we rub against other people who also have the center as themselves. And if we make the center to be Krishna, then as Prabhupada said, if you throw one rock after another into the water, they all make circles or ripples. And as you throw them in different places, all the ripples ripple against each other. But if you take a whole handful and you throw them at one place together, then they make a very large rippling effect, and this goes out all over the water. So this was the desire of Srila Prabhupada, that we would together make a very powerful ripple that would go out and expand throughout the, reverberate throughout the materialistic atmosphere. But we all know it's not so easy. It sounds wonderful to talk about. It's not at all so easy to do. But still, we have to understand what the principle is if we want to achieve success. And you can go back to the explanation, because actually, as I was trying to get some things together to speak, I noticed that we end up going round in circles, because the material world is a reflection of the spiritual world. So you see the same thing here, there, and then the same thing there, here, and there's nothing more than the spiritual. As we go back to here, here we go, we see this again. There's nothing beyond that. And we can decide where we want to take up our residence. And that was something that we have to think in our own heart. And then when we make that decision, we have to work towards what our decision has been. But this is the place that we want to hear about and go.
Two things.
Tomorrow we'll go out, I think, around about 9:30, is that right?
No, 9.
9, okay. And we're going to Manasi Ganga. We'll spend some time there. Then we'll go on to Govindakund. And from there we'll walk around. Those who are with us, I don't know if there's so many who were here last year, we went to Sarabi Kund. So I think we will go there again, past Punchari. We'll walk, and from Sarabi Kund we'll come back. You can say the rest.
Tomorrow.
Okay.
So